President Udall and Kate Black. And I want to also acknowledge some other members here, tax off, as we call it, Mary Krogan. And thank you to Catherine Montano, Susan Phillip, and Rosemary Changson for their work on today's event. Please also enter the raffle in the back. You'll be drawing for one of these prizes up here at the end. So please get on back there before you leave today. I have had the pleasure of being in a few meetings with Debbie Obley. And one thing I know is that she's the kind of person that you want in the meetings because she tells it like it is. And that's part of the reason why PACSAW is so pleased to present Debbie Obley today, who is the Associate Vice President for Budget Operations. She's been with UCOP for 30 years. She oversees system-wide budget. She did her undergrad at Occidental, and she also has a law degree. And we're so pleased to introduce and present today Debbie Obley. Thank you.
Yeah, but if I'm not comfortable, I think Steve, make an eye contact with everybody if I'm standing up. So the title of my talk today is How to Succeed in University Business Without Really Crying. For those of you who are too young to know, that's a play on words from a movie starring Robert Morse that was How to Succeed in Business Without Really Crying. So I put in the crying thing because, I don't think I have spent many days crying in this place, but you kind of get the edge sometimes. And so I thought it was an apt title for this because what I'm going to do is, rather than talk about front to back what I've done over 30 years, I thought I'd just give you my top 10 tips for how to succeed in this place, this very special place we have. I think we all, I've been talking to a lot of union groups lately, and they're very frustrated, of course, with the times and all the bad decisions that are being made. And they talk about don't you understand how devoted we are to this place? And don't you understand? And of course, we understand because we all feel the same way, don't we? I mean, have you ever been in a meeting that wasn't filled with people just like us who love this place and for however long you've been here, been absolutely committed, heart and soul, at some point in time, to the success of this place and each other, and I try to convey that to them. I think it's effective with them because I think they feel it too. I think they're there because they feel strongly about where they're coming from and what they're doing and getting recognition for it, and that's what we all seek, isn't it, all the time. So my top 10 tips are really about character building experiences, I suppose. I have had many of them. Cracked the whip many times. Had the whip cracked on me. So the first one is, in my opinion, don't sweat the small stuff. Don't be petty. Think about things in a broader, larger point of view from a distance, maybe. I mean, sometimes maybe with the situation, you have to get away from it a little bit and see it from some other perspective. See it from how Maria would see it, or how Lynn would see it, and think about why they might react differently than what you intended or what you thought. And I've done that so many times. I can't tell you how many. My best lessons, I think, were from Larry Hirschman, who had not a petty bone in his body. This was my former boss of 30 years. He was a genius and very good at what he did. But I think one of his finest traits was that he knew what battles to fight and what not to fight. And he let the things that he decided not to fight roll off pretty well. Best example I think I can think of is Regents meeting where we're in a budget crisis. This was in the early aughts. And Bustamante decided to go at him. And at one point, and there was a debate back and forth, and Larry had talked about fee increases in a certain way. And Bustamante said, "All I can say to you, Mr. Hirschman, is liar, liar, pants on fire."
Oh, no.
Not Bustamante's finest moment, and definitely lost my vote for when he ran for governor. But Larry handled it beautifully. Larry, we all got upset. I mean, all of us in the office, all of us in the building, were mortified that he would be talked to like that in the Regents meeting when he was simply trying to explain something. Mm-hmm. And he came back from that bounce. He just, don't worry about that.
He just knew that, he knew where it was coming from. He knew he knew better than to succumb to the judgment and all the other things that were behind that comment, and he let it go. And I'm trying very hard to model myself after that kind of behavior, because I think it serves us all well when we're really trying to focus on what's really important and let the small things go. But I have a couple corollaries to that one. Corollary number one came from John Griffin, who was at the time our committee consultant in the Senate. And we were having another battle, and I can't remember what the battle was about, but I was getting really, really mad. And I couldn't believe that at the point where the committee process was closing down and we were heading into conference committee, that committee was taking these actions. I don't remember what they were now. That's how you know, ridiculous this is. He sent me this thing that I put on my wall. It was a poster-like thing. And the message is, nothing is less important than the score at halftime. He was right. I was going, and Deborah has taught me this on my executive coaching lessons. I was going on the meter of reaction meter, where this is low and this is hot. I was going all the way over here to hot, midway through the whole process. I had a long way to go before I should have gotten to the hot part. And I really thought of that as a valuable lesson that I've tried. I have that sign. Well, I had it in my Sacramento office. I guess I need to move it back here because I'm not so much up there anymore. But reminding me all the time to keep perspective, keep track of where you are and where you're headed, and measure your reactions accordingly, I think. And then corollary number two, this was from Larry Hirschman, because I talked to him about this. He says, and I agree with him, be flexible in your definition of winning. If you can, find a win, make lemonade out of lemons, or you know, all the phrases that you can think of that are go along with that. I highly recommend it. It's a good way to keep yourself out of the cellar and keep yourself on a positive track. Not lose sight of where you're headed, and I think keeping positive about that really helps. So my next tip is hire really smart people, because I can tell you from my office that you can surround yourself with people who are smarter than you, and all it does is make you look better and help you get your job done better. Don't be afraid of it. Don't be afraid of the fact that there are people who know more than you do. Always, and this is, I think I have corollary number two to this, is always, no, this is on the next one, never mind. but point being, don't be afraid to hire really smart people, but then when you do, you have to keep them happy. You got to do stuff that keeps them happy and wanting to do their job. So part of your job is to keep other people around you feeling gratified in their work and making sure that the gratification you're getting from working with all these smart people is somehow transferring back to them. These are all my guys right over here. So I think you need to stick to your values. I think that has been critical for me. I think it gets me into trouble sometimes because I say what I think a lot of the time. I think I've got a mouth. That's what Larry kept telling me when he was leaving. He said, be careful of your mouth. But, you know, trust your instincts, because generally, especially if you've been doing what you're doing for a while, or you have an affinity for what you're doing, and you feel like you know what you're doing, then you probably do know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And so you need to trust that. And you need to have faith in the fact that you've prepared yourself, and you're there for a reason, and people have put you there for a reason. And you need to get your own, draw your own energy off of that. That's what I do. I do have a corollary to this, and this is the one I was talking about earlier. Never forget that you bring a lot to the table that's unique from other people. So every time somebody left, all through the budget office, so I started in 1979, every time somebody left, I got their job. And a lot of people left over that period. So I got a lot of jobs all along the way. They were all opportunities for me. The people who left were all stars. They were all amazing people. I couldn't believe I was going to have to follow in their footsteps because they knew what they were doing. They had been at it for a long time. And I was coming in as a youngster and, you know, I didn't know anything. I was still learning. Well, what I learned from all of that is I did the job very differently from how they did their jobs. Every time I was very different. I didn't have necessarily their strengths. Mm-hmm. The people who all left were all these, you know, kind of anal, tight, controlled, had a grip on everything kind of people every time. And, you know, why they were putting somebody like me in there after them, I never understood, except I did it differently. I had other things that I brought to those assignments that I think were beneficial. I'm not going to say who was better or worse. I don't think it matters. I think the point is they had really good things that they brought to the table, but I had really good things I brought to the table. And it worked. And, you know, you learn from all of that, I think. So trust in the fact that you've developed your own skill set that people outside of yourself have determined is valuable to this place, enough to hire you to do this job and to promote you when the chance comes. You get an opportunity and you get a promotion, and it's based on faith because it's a new job for you. Trust that because it works. So another one that I think is really important to keep track of is that I think sometimes, and maybe mostly, it's more important to be effective than it is to be right. And what I mean by that is it's not as important necessarily to set the record straight. It's more important most times to get the result you want. And what's the best way to get the result you want? It goes back to how you define winning, I suppose. Think about when you're in a situation where you're just filled with the injustice of what you're facing. Somebody's done something that you just can't believe they're getting away with, or that's what's going to be out there for people to hear and understand, and you're just saying, how can we leave it? We can't leave it like that, or we've got to make sure that this person knows that what they've just said is wrong. Well, you know what? You don't need to necessarily do that if what you want to do is get to the end point. So it's really keep your eye on the ball, where you're trying to go. Where you're trying to go is set the record straight, then yeah, you got to set the record straight. But if where you're trying to go is to get a whole bunch of people who are not on your plate yet, you're trying to herd them all into a point, and setting them straight along the way isn't going to get them there. And I say, you know, I drop it. When it's me, I drop it. I keep my eye as much as I can on that ball. Because that result is what I'm really interested and going to be gratified by, and not necessarily knowing that I was right and they were wrong. But you have to maintain your own credibility. And I think this is like maybe one of the most important things that I learned working in the budget office. For us in the budget office, and I think it's true for most of the offices in this place, but we were on the front line, so I think it's especially true. You couldn't do business with people in Sacramento if they thought you weren't going to be straight. Actually, that's not right. There are people up there who do business like that all the time. We didn't want to do that. The university has been a high road institution all this time, and so it was really important that when any of us spoke who were on the front line, what we said could be taken as truth, as verified, as trusted. They might want to trust and verify, but the point was, if it came out of one of our mouths, people needed to be able to count on that. And Larry and others in the office who I was raised by taught me to protect that more than any other asset. Protect your own credibility, because for decades now, I think, it has served me and this institution well, that when I was talking to somebody up in Sacramento or at the campus or wherever, they could count, they could take it to the bank. I might be telling them a bad thing, I might be telling them a good thing, whatever it was, they knew that they could count on it. And I think that has probably been my strongest asset. And so I recommend to you that you also do what you can to maintain your own credibility and nurture it and foster that, because if you end up having a lifetime career someplace, it makes the back end a lot easier than the front end, because people know that they can count on you. All right, so embrace character building experiences.
That's what you call it.
I had a bunch of them. I mean, I had a bunch of them. But I'd say one of the ones that was probably the biggest lesson I ever learned. And I'm not going to talk about names, and don't try to figure out who this was, but just learn from the experience that I learned from. So I was coming up. People had left. I got their job. People left. I got their job. I'm still pretty low down. And there was a vacancy in a pretty high-level job in the budget office, and that vacancy stayed for a year and a half. And in the meantime, the person I replaced, who also knew a lot about this area, about dealing with Sacramento and being Larry's backup and dealing with the legislative analyst, he left. So there we were with this big gaping hole. Two people gone who knew what they were doing, and Larry asked me to help out with the legislative analyst. So I did. Year and a half, I did this. I really got good at dealing with the legislative analyst. In fact, the legislative analyst didn't want to deal with anybody else but me, because I had gotten to build up my credibility with this person so much that he trusted me. So then they hire somebody in over me, making, you know, $80,000 more than me, and didn't know, this person was not knowledgeable about the budget, came from outside, was had a long learning curve, and made, you know, a lot of mistakes and a lot of stuff that I had to then fix and cover up for, and, or not cover up for, but, you know, deal with. And I felt really victimized and unappreciated and undervalued and abused in certain ways, because I was, you know, doing all this work. I was working pretty much, you know, 12 hours a day, pretty much every day, on weekends and everything, pretty much all the time working. And this person was getting all the credit and all the glory and getting the recognition and the money. Went on for, you know, 4 or 5 years. So I'm getting frustrated and thinking, you know, I don't think I can stand this, and I start looking around. And in the meantime, we're up in Sacramento and we have a hearing, and our biggest issue that year was faculty salaries. Most critical thing was to get our faculty salary increase. Everybody had made it number one priority, and it was urgent. This was, you know, a fight. This was something we were not necessarily going to win. And Vasconcelos was the chair of the committee that was overseeing this, and he was out for blood. And so we get up to our hearing, and people are missing from the Republican side, who we needed. We needed their votes. And we get to the hearing, and Larry's up there testifying, and this person is looking around and seeing we don't have the votes. Goes out of the room, makes a phone call. Legislator comes in off his deathbed. He had pneumonia. He came in, voted. We won. Lesson learned. What you bring to the table with all your technical and all this stuff and all your background and everything, it might not be enough to be able to deal with something like that. Do you know what I'm saying? This person was able to go out and get a vote off of this person's deathbed and turn the tide for the university's highest priority that year. That person brought a lot more to the table than I could ever bring at that point in my career. So the fact that I was working like a dog and doing all this stuff and gaining all this technical knowledge and, you know, very good at what I did, that didn't necessarily mean that I was yet at the point where I could deliver that kind of leadership at that point in my career. And no matter how many things this person wasn't able to do, the fact that this person could do that was worth it. That's what the university was paying for when they bought that person's skill set. And so for me, the lesson learned was, just because I was gaining all this technical knowledge and I was learning all these things and I could do all these things, there was a dimension in me that still needed to get developed before I was going to be in that league. And I calmed way down then. I got real patient, and I realized I had been giving short shrift to this person all this time. Totally changed my whole attitude, by the way. This person and I are best friends. And it was a real eye-opening, character-building, pace reversing. You know, I was on one track and I turned and went on a different track because of this experience. And so I hope you can all learn something from this story, because it really made a difference in how I approached, I think, the rest of my own professional development. Another one. Try to view change as an opportunity rather than as an insult. Guilty? Very guilty. I'm working on this one myself. I think, you know, it's worse for somebody like me, been in the same job essentially for 30 years. It's hard to have people, so we're surrounded by new people. Everywhere we look, there are new people. And there are old people in new jobs. And then there's old people, you know. Everywhere. So for me, like I said, when somebody left, they got their job. I wasn't reviewing that at the time as change, but it really was change. And change brought opportunity for me every time. And I see that here, too. I think I have a feeling that when I finally retire, I'm gonna leave this place in a, it's going to be great. It's going to be hard to leave, because while we're going through bad times right now, the seeds are being set. We've got a new organization going. We've got new blood. We're going to have new ideas. And if you can turn old dogs around like me and have us do new tricks, it's going to be better for the university and for the Office of the President. We're going to be better. Every time. So I went through 4 economic downturns. This is my 4th one. So up and then down, and then up and then down. And every time it was down, it went back up again. And when it went back up again, there were still things that we didn't take care of, but there were other things that got really taken care of, much better than they were before. And so, you know, all I can say is, in this time when we're all struggling to get through we have a bad year ahead of us, we probably have 2 bad years ahead of us. We had a bad year behind us, so we're going to have this period here where it's going to be hard and we're going to struggle, and we've said goodbye to a lot of people we love and didn't want to say goodbye to. But you know, at the end of it all, trust me, it is going to be better, because it always has been. All my other times, it's ended up better. So it's like I was a Catholic, mystery of faith concept, you know? Have faith in something you don't see, because you know in your heart, this place is made up of such good people and such talent, that it will come right, because we haven't made mistakes. We're doing right things, but it needs some time to come right. And so, it feeds into my next one, which is take the long-term view. If you look at things short-term all the time, you will be frustrated all the time. If you don't want to not look at short things. You don't want to not look at things in the short run. You want to see things short run and medium term, but you really want to keep your eye out there on the long run. Have some kind of measure of success that really takes you far-reaching, farther than this year or next even. Look at your career and think about where you want to be. And it doesn't even need to be, I want to be this level. It needs to be, I want to have developed a broader range of skills, or I want to be expert at this, or I don't know what it is. It's going to be different for everybody. But I have been benefited so many times when faced with, you know, demoralizing situations and rough times and saying goodbye to people I didn't want to say goodbye to, and all sorts of situations. I have been benefited by the knowledge that over the long run, you get past all that and you end up in a good place. I always have. And you're because you're surrounded by colleagues you respect, and work you're doing is valuable, and the place we're doing it for is beloved, it will come right. It will come right, and trust in that. And then I think, too, this is my number 9, develop relationships across a range of folks. You never know where people are going to end up. Like, I have this pal up in Sacramento, Jeannie Oropeza, who is right now the program budget manager for the higher education and education sectors of the state budget. So I first met her when she was in a committee consultant role in the Assembly Ways and Means Committee on capital outlay for K-12. She wasn't even our committee consultant. But because they didn't have one on our capital outlay budget, she happened to do our capital outlay budget for 2 years. So I got to know her then. I mean, she was just a little committee consultant. You know, we were both little people in big organizations. And we just liked each other. And oh my God, I mean, the translation of all of that friendship and all that to where we both ended up now, it's just been, it's been huge. There was no way to know that. There was no way to know who was going to end up where. And you know, Patrick, same thing. He, 20 years ago, he was our committee consultant. And, you know, loved him like a brother for 20 years. And now look at us. We're partners in this fabulous place. And so, you know, develop your relationships as best you can. Nurture them. Don't let them go. Find people. Seek people who are different from you, because you'll learn a lot from them, and you'll be surprised at where, I guess I'm talking to the young ones at this point, you'll be surprised at where some of these people end up and you end up 20 years from now. And then finally, last but not least, cut your hair off every now and then. It really works. So, well, let me just say one more thing. So, 30 years. I have loved coming to work here pretty much every single day. Pretty much every single day. Well, the 4 or 5 years there, they were hard that I told you about. But and it's hard right now. You know, it's hard with everybody doing so much work and having lost so many colleagues. And we're still, like I say, getting to know each other and what each other does in this new structure. And you know, I think the place is so full of talent. And we're so misunderstood by the campuses, I think. So in a way, we have to have faith in each other, because maybe we're not going to get that kind of gratification out there. But the fact is, we do. I find on every single project I ever work on with anybody in this building, it's a gratifying experience. And it's what, when I think I just can't deal with the enormity of, you know, $800 million of budget cuts, or the fact that we have to go back out for another fee increase, or whatever the issue is, when I think I can't get out of bed and do that, I look at faces. I come up with faces and people in my office and people that I'm working with on a project with, and they're the ones that get me out of bed every single day. So, you know, I think you guys are terrific. I think the place is terrific. I think you've chosen a great place to plant yourselves for however long you're here. And, you know, I think we all share this very common ground, which is a love of the University of California and what it does, and then what we do for it. And we're all gratified, I think, by that. So it's a pleasure working with you, pleasure doing business with you every day, and good luck. So can I answer any questions?
One.
I was going to say, I'll have a question.
Four economic downturns. Is this the fourth?
Yes.
Okay. How is this one different, and why are you optimistic about how OP is going to get better? Just more detail on that.
This is worse than all of the other ones because of the magnitude. And not only because of the magnitude, but also because we've been through the other ones, and so all the low-hanging fruit was gone. You know, when I started in the 80s here, that recession was kind of slight, comparatively speaking, to all the rest that have happened. So, but we were doing drastic things. We thought we were doing really drastic things. We did mid-year fee increases, and we, you know, traveler curtailment and hiring freezes and all these drastic things. Nothing prepared us for what happened in the 90s. Absolutely nothing. Unprecedented cuts in the 90s for the whole state. I mean, it sent the state reeling. But what it meant was, so we did VERIP and got rid of, you know, hordes of people all at once, and we you know, everybody in the state did things that they never dreamed that they would do. We got through them. And then the aughts happened, and all of a sudden, a decade later, not all of a sudden, because our own material says every decade starts with a recession, we have another one, and we've already done all the really bad things, and they're hitting us again, and now we're saying, wait a minute, we don't have any of those easy things to go, there are no easy marks to go after now, we've done all those things, now we have to really start looking at some serious things. We get through that, but in 7 years to come through another one. Nothing like that. I mean, to try to deal with that on the heels of the one that happened 7 years ago. So I think this is a lot worse. I'm optimistic because mystery faith. I believe that the University of California is so good at what it does, and the people here are so good at what they do that we'll find a way. I have no doubt in my mind. No doubt in my mind. I have no doubt in my mind. I have no doubt arguing for a person to take a job here right now. No hesitation whatsoever. Long-term view, this was number 9 or 8, because over the long term, there's going to be better things, and there's going to be more good things, and there's going to be bad things. I guarantee it. But I don't have any evidence.
I have a question. To your long view point, Deb, thank you, first of all, for everything. For this and for personally. In taking the long view, you talked about it being different for everyone, but when you look back and you took the long view on your career, what was it that you wanted to, I mean, I'm sure it wasn't like,
I wanted to be an assistant vice president.
Really?
Yep.
I was just going to say, it wasn't to be an AVP.
No, it was. It really was.
Okay.
You know, it's funny. When I was in school, I wanted to be a lawyer. When I got out of school, and I didn't know what to, so, okay, a little bit of, here's how I ended up here. I graduated from law school, took the bar in Arizona, and left before I even knew whether I passed, because I had no intention of practicing law. When I took the job, I decided what I really needed to do was work in a place that I could wake up and feel okay about. Or actually, be on my deathbed and feel okay about. So I knew, being a lawyer, I was not going to feel okay. You know, I didn't want to help people get divorced or help corporations get a lot of money or, you know, actually where I was headed was criminal defense. And I really didn't want to help guilty people get off of charges and stuff. It was going to be a hard life. And I just didn't think I thought I was happier than that. And so, so then I finally said, what I need to do is pick a place and set my sail there. So I picked the University of California. And it was just so the right thing to do. I can't even begin to tell you. And then the way I got this job in the budget office was really a great story. It's really worth telling you. I don't know. I have a couple more.
Oh, yeah. Right.
So this is the best story. So we had an assistant vice president, a director, and an assistant director. The director's wife had a best friend who wanted this. It was an assistant administrative analyst. It was the lowest you could go in the administrative analyst series. And one wife had a best friend, and the other wife had a best friend. Who were there, and they were both qualified for the job. And this guy who worked in the budget office also knew of me, and he wanted me to apply. Hmm. And so I applied. We were the 3 finalists. So it's the 2 best friends and me. And Bill Baker still, if he were here, he'd tell the story himself. He loved the fact that this came to this. And they, I guess, had a knockdown, drag-out drinking session after the interviews were complete to decide who was going to get this job. Mm-hmm. And if Bill were here, I think he'd say, oh, the decision was made in a half hour. You know, the way out was you. So I was the compromise candidate. But, you know, they spent the next, you know, 6 hours trying to figure out how they were going to go and tell their wives. You know. And, you know, 2 years later, Jess stopped me in the hall and said, you know, I've just been meaning to tell you, we sure made the right decision. And, you know, Larry, of course, we were, you know, blood brothers, and Bill also. And so I ended up in the job that I was born to do. I mean, I was clearly born to that job. And it was just luck, pure luck. Because if the two wives hadn't both had a candidate, I wouldn't be here today. You know, and there's no explaining that. It just happens. I sort of felt that way because I was so in sync with what I felt my skill set and what that job required were so in sync that it does seem like fate. But it wasn't. It was just, you know, it was just one of those lucky things for me.
But the AVP, that link.
Yeah, no, I had that. I think I felt like I had, so there were points in my career where I felt like I needed to get separated from the pack. And I actually went to Larry and said, I need to get separated from the pack. And, you know, he made it happen. It took him a while. It took him always. Budget office was always lean and mean, so we were always kind of behind everybody else. And, mm-hmm. and you know, it took a while longer than it maybe should have, but I got there, and I did. I think I knew when I got separated from the pack that the place for me was at that level. So I can't explain how I knew it, but I just knew it. I knew that what I could do decision-wise or choice-wise or back, you know, it's all about backing up your choices, being able to say that this is the reason, this is the right way to go, and here's the reason why. And I think leadership is being able to do that quickly, and maybe even suddenly, and maybe, and in a meeting when things are happening differently than what you've projected, and you need to be prepared to respond. I mean, I think leadership is when you have the confidence in your own instincts. You've got the knowledge to back you up. You've got the experience that has taught you lessons over a lifetime. I feel pretty confident about speaking up in most meetings at this point. And, you know, there are people who can kick me under the table when I go too far. Yeah, I can't explain how I got that sight, but I had it from the get-go.
So why not VP rather than
AVP? Well, you know, they ain't over yet. I think more than not VP, it just seemed like to succeed, to be where at least I thought my minimum needed to be AVP, I think.
Well, sometimes you just aim too low. I mean, I'm not saying this wise, but sometimes we do as women.
I sure as hell did that from the get-go. You know, I think I set my sights conservatively. Not low, but conservatively. Well, in my law school class, we were 52% women. There was no doubt all my life I was going to college. So I was on that cusp of generations where people 3 years ahead of me didn't have that same knowledge necessarily, but I was in that area, you know, where you just went to college and everybody knew you were going to college. So I think I just made it.
Plus, you set yourself intermediate, sort of more attainable goals, and you know, on from there. That's how I have done my life.
I think we do. Part of it's generational, but part of it is being surrounded by, for one thing, the literature and all the yap around you is, you know, the men are, there's the glass ceiling and the men are all up here, and so everybody just kind of accepts it, and we all take a path that sort of supports that sometimes, you know, and I think you're right. I think if what you're saying and asking your question is that we should challenge that and question that in our own selves.
I just wondered, since you were talking about the technical and the political talent, and I wonder how women can get to Sacramento and, you know, get somebody off their deathbed type of thing. And maybe there are more women legislators. Maybe.
Yeah, no, I think at this point there's virtually no difference up in Sacramento between women and men.
Very strong there.
I think in politics, it just feels like it's
exposure and opportunity also. I mean, you had, you know, part of the reason you're so good at what you do is because you don't present to be anything other than what you are. I mean, you ring totally true but in order to be able to have other people understand that, you have to have exposure to those other people. So being up there and allowing people just to be around you. I mean, you could get anybody you want off their deathbed today.
Yeah.
although you probably have, you know, you probably have a more steady presence than any legislators because of
Term limits. Oh, God, yeah.
So that changes too.
I think it's in terms of the tactic. You know, I was always a tactic. I was a bridge player. I think my best lessons in picking winners and losers came from learning bridge. I've talked to Mike about this. I mean, you know, you have to you get the hand you're dealt, and you've got a partner you got to deal with, number one, and then you've got to, there are rules and everything, but you've got to have instinct about what works and what doesn't work and what chances you can take it. And you've got to kind of have a sense of how the flow goes, you know, how the flow of issues go. And then you know how to strategically play your cards. And, you know, so I recommend everybody learn to play bridge. Yeah.
Sorry, I missed part of your talk, but I wanted to know.
I'll give it again. Number one.
Do you feel that you had a mentor or mentors? And if you did, did you feel it was very helpful to you? Do you think that's important?
So the person I was talking to you about where I had my character building experience, that person was really good to me. I was not good to that person. And that person was really, really good to me. I really recommend it. I learned from my executive coach. So Deborah York over here was my executive coach for almost a year. And I think one of the things that she could tell me things that even though I knew them, I wasn't doing anything about them. I wasn't acting on them. She'd say it in a way that would get through that wood in my head and be an inspiration to do something about it. So she was effective with me. This is about being effective. I think with a mentor, if you can partner up with somebody who gets through to you and helps you think about things in a way that you wouldn't otherwise do yourself, I think it's she saved my life. She saved my life twice. I was a virtual suicide victim, and not literally. I mean, career wise, and. She, you know, pulled me out of that. And also, but you know, the first six lessons, first 6 weeks we met, you know, she comes in the first day, and I said, I don't even know why they're doing this, why they're having me do this. They're going to hire somebody over me, and this is all going to be for nothing anyway. And I was, you know, very down at that point. And she said, you're not looking at this right. She taught me a lesson that day. And she taught me a lesson the next 5 weeks, to the point where I called a staff meeting and said, I have to share with you all these lessons I've learned because they're going to help me too. I mean, people help, other people can help you see things that you otherwise wouldn't see yourself and help you act positively, in a positive way, constructively, in a way that maybe you wouldn't do yourself. So I really, really recommend it. And I'm very happy to be a mentor to somebody. I think you need to find a good partner. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it matters. You need to be able to, that's why Deborah worked with me, because she got through to my brain where maybe somebody else wouldn't have. Just good connection there. So I do recommend it. Find the right one.
I have another question, but I don't want to pog up the questions.
That's okay.
With all these changes, what do you think, what are you thinking about the status of living at OP now?
Good and getting better. Good and getting better. Katie has been an immense addition, I think, to the power structure of the women in this office. Mary has been a very good contributor to that. Mm-hmm. You know what it is? It's women performing well. That's what it is. It's women having the opportunity and performing well. Mm-hmm. And I think I think you can get tripped up. We know women who have gotten tripped up and can't explain. It's tragic, you know, absolutely tragic what's happened to some of these women. But I think by and large, you can control for that. You can't control it totally, but you can control for that in how you approach things and how you are effective. And so I really think building your own credibility, I think my top 10 tips are the right thing for women, because I think it really helps you build your own power base. It's not all about power, but it is about ability to influence, ability to get people to do what you think they need to do, and to be right about it, to have it be the right thing on the back end. Have everybody agree that what you just set out as a course was the right one. That's what men do. And I think that just comes from a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge about your area and a lot of collegiality, having people trust you, having people see you be effective and be right.
Any other questions?
I've silenced the masses.
Well, on behalf of Paxwell, we want to thank you so much, Debbie, for your service to UCOP and for taking the time to share your lessons and your wisdom with us.
Thank you.
Thank you. And hopefully you've all entered the raffle. This is a thank you not only for coming, but also for your service to OP, too. We know there's a lot of hardworking people in here. And right now, we're going to have Rosemary.
There's hardly any things in here.
That's what
we're going to pass around some.
And while we're waiting for that, in a few months, we can look forward. Please look for announcements for the next talk on this event.
In a few months, in October, my president, she used to talk to right over there when we're speaking. So,